Elkham Garcia has written articles about Afghanistan for a number of years and was a colleague at the Kansas City Star. He was last on this program in 2009 talking about his memoir of his time in the war-torn country, and he joins us this morning on the phone from Miami. Malcolm, nice to have you again. Welcome.
Thanks, Steve. Good to hear you.
You've won a Sigma Delta Chi Award as well as a Studs Terkel Award, Malcolm, for excellence in coverage of the working class for your stories on the burn pits in Afghanistan. One of those stories was titled Smokescreen. In Afghanistan, the U.S. military disposes of garbage, computers, motorbikes, TV, shoes, even human feces in open burn pits. Are toxic clouds from these sites making everyone sick? That was the headline. And what was your conclusion there, Malcolm?
Well, the conclusion is simply yes, people are getting sick. The people who are working the burn pits, and these burn pits, to better understand them, they're similar to a trash pit, but it's about the size of a football field, and they throw every conceivable piece of waste in there. Recently, there have been some changes where they can't throw in body parts and car batteries and other material that can be toxic, but they're still burning plastic and styrofoam and things that we could never do here. If you put a bunch of plastic in your driveway and decided to burn it like a leaf pile, you'd be fined and ticketed and all sorts of things. But they can do it over in Afghanistan. They're doing it in Iraq. And there's the people who are working the trash pits, both the locals and the American troops, aren't wearing any protective gear, so they're just inhaling the smoke. And I interviewed people who, veterans who had returned to the States, who were deathly ill with lung issues and other bronchial problems, and two veterans actually died, and the VA conceded that it was likely due to their exposure to burn pits. And one of the stories that I wrote was about, well, what is the effect on the local population? So last summer I went to Afghanistan to see how Afghans were faring who were living near the burn pits, and it was a similar find of people complaining about various lung ailments, except in Afghanistan there isn't the medical kind of system that we have here that can even come close to attempting to treat those diseases, or at least, you know, and diagnose them.
You know, Malcolm, why not just bury this stuff? Why do they have to burn it too?
Well, the short answer is it's just simpler. It'd be very expensive to cart it off and to set up a facility where you can burn it. Also, it's dangerous. I mean, you know, the troops are getting attacked enough as it is when they go out on patrol. People don't want to put themselves at risk being in a convoy carting garbage. So it's just simpler to burn the stuff.
You know, you wrote that the air around some of these pits was so dirty that it rained mud. That just amazed me. What a great description of that.
Well, I mean, it's just thick black smoke. Imagine a football field filled with trash, plastic, styrofoam that's burning 24/7, and the trash is lit by jet fuel. So you're not only breathing the toxic fumes of the material that's burning, you're breathing jet fuel as well.
Tell us about Billy McKenna, a seemingly indestructible soldier who died of cancer after he was exposed to the burn pits.
He, you know, as his wife described him to me, he was this kind of big sort of football player physique. He played in a real hard rock acid band, and he joined the Army. He was fairly old. I believe he was almost ineligible. I think he just made it in, and he wanted to join because of 9/11. And he was working the burn pits. And when he came back, he started having a variety of problems, mostly in his chest, and then he developed brain tumors. And eventually, I mean, long story short, he died. And you saw this, you know, man who was huge, think of any kind of football player, reduced to somebody who looked like he had just walked out of a concentration camp. He was just emaciated, and his family was just taken through 9 months of hell because there was really no treatment for him. And he was desperate to live, so he insisted on getting, you know, chemo and radiation and every other conceivable thing, but there was just nothing to stop the cancer, particularly the cancer that took over his brain. So his children watched their father die a horrible death, and towards the end he became somewhat abusive because he was terrified, and also he was losing his senses because of the brain cancer.
To what extent, Malcolm, is the U.S. government taking responsibility for all this?
Well, there certainly have been people who have been talking about it, and so they have made some moves where they're restricting those things that can be burned in open pits, or they're using closed incinerators for some of these items. But to date, nobody has really just come out and said, you know, these burn pits have been a horrible mistake and have resulted in the deaths and ill health of countless veterans. It's this generation's Agent Orange. I mean, part of the problem is if they just came out and admitted it, then I presume there'd be, you know, lawsuits as long as this country. And, you know, the government certainly just has a history of not wanting to acknowledge, you know, the side effects of going into combat, whether it's Agent Orange or the burn pits, that there's a downside that all the yellow ribbons we wear aren't going to address. And one of those downsides is the effects on veterans, whether it's mental health issues or the physical effects of having endured combat.
Well, VA officials, though, Malcolm, they are seeing a boost in the number of soldiers reporting respiratory problems. Is there any doubt that most of these are being caused by the burn pits?
It really depends on who you talk to. I mean, one of the kind of escape clauses that the Army uses is that there's a lot of pollution in both Iraq and Afghanistan, and they're right about that. So they're using they're equivocating. Yes, it could be burn pits, but also it could be, you know, diesel fumes from all the buses that don't have air pollution controls and things like that. So they're acknowledging that the veterans are returning with respiratory problems, but they're not acknowledging that one of the issues is burn pits. They're saying it could be a host of issues. So it's kind of two steps forward and one step back. Yes, we recognize they're coming back with respiratory problems, but no, we're not going to acknowledge that we may be responsible for many of those problems.
If you're just joining us, we're visiting with Malcolm Garcia, an award-winning journalist who just returned from Afghanistan, and another reporting trip there for him. You know, Malcolm, the U.S. is downsizing its forces in Afghanistan, with the president proposing complete withdrawal by the end of 2014. It seems that most of us, you know, these days really aren't thinking very much about Afghanistan that much anymore. How do the soldiers over there feel about that, in this sense that they, too, in some ways, are the forgotten ones?
You know, I can't obviously speak for all of them, but
sure.
I can speak for the ones I've met and that I was embedded with last year. And, you know, I didn't hear them say so much that they felt forgotten as much as they were just wondering what they were doing there. They really, you know, and again, this is, you know, just anecdotal with one group of soldiers that I was with. They really didn't understand at this point the purpose of the war. They didn't trust the Afghan people. Many of them just flat out didn't like them. They didn't understand the culture and the culture clash of their background and being dropped in the middle of Afghanistan just really, you know, confused them, and some were just outright hostile towards Afghans. But the general sense I had from people is that they didn't really understand what they were doing there, and they didn't feel that whatever gains they were making would hold, that the various outposts that they were being assigned to would collapse once they left.
Do you have any sense of that? I mean, will any gains be given up as soon as the troops leave and come home?
Well, certainly the Afghans have a sense of that. They see trouble ahead, and I spoke to a number of them who have openly talked about their rearming themselves and keeping guns in the house, because when the Americans leave, they expect problems. There are Afghans I spoke to who work for a variety of Western organizations. I won't go into detail because I don't want to put their jobs at risk, but they told me that they've already been issued the equivalent of a green card and visas to the particular Western country that's employing them as translators to get them out in 2014, because those agencies expect trouble.
Does all that make sense to you? I mean, do you have any feeling yourself? Is it time to get out of there, or is it worthwhile to stick around and defend the country?
Well, you know, the time to if we should have gotten in at all, and that I think is still a question that needs to be asked. The time to have really thrown all our chips into that onto the table would have been in 2001, 2002. Mm-hmm. And many of us feel that that didn't happen because of the Iraq War and that sort of thing. Right now, in my view, defending Afghanistan is like defending the Corleone family. Karzai is so corrupt that we're sending young men and women to risk their lives for a government that just is on the take, and that's how Afghans view it. They see it as corrupt. They have no faith in the government, and they anticipate that it will fall once the Americans leave. I don't think the Americans will leave in totality. I don't think they'll leave Bagram and other major bases, but they anticipate the government will fall when the bulk of the Western troops leave.
How difficult is it, you know, for a journalist like yourself to get permission these days to spend time with the troops?
I mean, the application process isn't that difficult. It takes some time, but it's not that difficult. Access, whether it's with American troops or with the White House or with the local municipality, there's always a trade-off, and part of that trade-off is how much tolerance will be given for criticism. For myself, I was told by a man in the Army who facilitated my embed that after the burn pit stories came out, I would never get an embed again. And in fact, I had applied for one after the burn pit stories, and I was denied. Now, nobody said we're denying you because of the burn pit stories, but it's an obvious conclusion given what this gentleman told me.
So you can't get back in again?
Most likely I can't. Now, somebody could call you up and say, no, we don't have any problem with Malcolm. But so far, all I can tell you is that last fall I was denied an embed when I had never been denied before, and that denial came right after the burn pit piece came out.
How many reporters are covering Afghanistan these days?
Yeah, I don't have an exact number.
Right.
There's still certainly a good handful. I mean, you certainly see stories coming out of there, but it's, you know, a lot of the oxygen now is understandably being drained towards Syria and the Middle East.
Our phone number here for Malcolm Garcia, if you want to join our conversation this morning as he talks about Afghanistan and his reporting trips there, 816-235-2888. Our email address, updatedate@kcur.org, or go to KCUR's Facebook page. You know, I've read that you now feel really, perhaps for the first time, a little leery about wandering off on your own in Afghanistan because of kidnapping threats. Why are you more concerned about that now than you were, say, a few years ago?
Well, it's happening more. The translator that I've worked with since 2001 for the first time told me not to wander off on my own. For the first time, he told me to cut my hair. I have a ponytail, and I've always had one when I've gone over there. And this is the first trip after 10 trips that he said, you need to cut your hair because you're going to attract too much attention.
And did you?
No, vanity won out.
Never.
If I'm going to go, then I have to have, they can hang my scalp or something. But
I can't imagine you without the ponytail, Malcolm. Yeah. But you decided not to do it, and you still went anyway.
You know, I went out, but you start thinking in a real skewed way. So I'd go out when there were traffic jams. I'd go out on my own because I thought if somebody's going to kidnap me, they don't want to be stuck in traffic for 3 hours. And Afghanistan has horrible traffic. I mean, to make an analogy, if you drove from downtown Kansas City to Roland Park, if that was the distance you were traveling in Afghanistan, you'd have to give yourself at least 3 hours one way. Because it's a city for 1.5 million people and has 4 million people in it, and everybody has a car. So when I went out on my own, I would always just time it with traffic. And if traffic was jammed, I felt, you know, I probably won't get kidnapped. They don't want to be stuck in traffic with me in their trunk. But I didn't go down a side street or anything like that when I used to do that all the time.
Tell us about the hotel you just stayed in and describe it to us.
It's called the Park Hotel. It's very nice. It has a beautiful courtyard, and it's just $50 U.S. a night. It has two fountains that are going 24/7. It's very green with a lot of potted geraniums and little walkways. It had they had a bird feeder, so all sorts of birds were there, including peacocks. There were cats that were roaming around that for some reason didn't attack the birds. And pretty much people who were there were from NGOs, aid organizations, and it's this kind of pristine scene that takes you off the dusty streets and into a little magic world until you look up, and every corner of the hotel above you has a bunker, a sand bunker, and in that is an Afghan security guard with an AK-47 surveying the streets around the hotel and surveying the people who come into the hotel. And there's a bunker actually right outside my bathroom, which created some awkward moments. But you were never – it was just this weird juxtaposition of this very, you know, nice, tranquil scene. It was really great to go there and get off the very dusty, clogged streets. And then you looked up and you realized that you were very much at risk. And when I spoke to the hotel and asked why there's so much security, he said because of you, meaning that Westerners were staying there.
Malcolm Garcia is our guest. He was my colleague at the Kansas City Star for a number of years. Again, our phone number here, 816-235-2888, and our email address, updatedate@kcur.org. Interesting email here, Malcolm, from an Air Force officer who sends us this email. I'm writing from Ramstein Air Force Base in Germany, where I'm listening to the show right now. He mentions a camp, Lemornier, has the same extensive burn pits that your guest is describing, and they are causing similar health problems as in Afghanistan. So I gather these burn pits are fairly universally used these days.
They are. Again, it's you know, this is, both Iraq and Afghanistan were wars on the cheap, and so it's just much cheaper to burn the trash and not really consider the consequences to the troops, let alone the locals.
You know, I know you're working on a story now about what the Afghan government does for its troops when soldiers have to drop out of the service due to combat injuries. What does the Afghanistan government do, Malcolm?
In a word, nothing. They don't have a VA. And as much as you know, veterans complain about the VA, at least the United States has a VA to complain about. There is absolutely nothing, really, that they do. They say that the troops don't suffer any mental health issues because the country has been at war for 32 years, so they're used to it, which is kind of an odd diagnosis when you think of it.
Mm-hmm.
And when I spoke to some doctors and the typical therapy, if you want to call it that, is just prescribing tranquilizers to someone who's having mental health issues. If it's a physical issue, you know, the healthcare system there has been blown back to the Stone Ages because of so much war.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the hospital that I was spending time in, you know, it would never pass muster here. There were flies, it was filthy, et cetera. And they're just doing the best that they can with very little.
You're also talking to kids who have lost limbs due to injuries suffered from coalition troops and the opposition, I guess, as the Taliban is referred to over there. What are you finding on that front?
Well, it's one of the things I think this country has to think about when we talk about going to war, because I was seeing kids who are still being injured by mines that were laid during the Russian invasion and occupation of the 1980s.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the country, I believe, next to Cambodia, Afghanistan is the most mined country in the world. And now that you're getting people who are stepping on mines that are a result of the current conflict, and they're civilians, they've done nothing, and they're kids, and they just get blown away, and then the prosthetic devices that are used are really big sticks of plastic, not sticks, literally. I mean, they're round and
mm-hmm.
and the size of a leg, but they look like somebody, you know, out of a pirate movie, just walking with this big peg leg, and their life has been traumatized, you know, for the remainder of their life.
Where are your stories appearing these days, Malcolm? If folks want to read what you're producing out of Afghanistan, where can they go?
I mean, there have been a number of places, as I'm freelancing now, Guernica Magazine, McSweeney's Magazine, Oxford American, and Virginia Quarterly Review are probably the most frequent places that I go.
You don't have a problem journalistically walking down paths that few other reporters tend to go, which is something I've always admired about you. How does that work for you? I mean, it's a courageous thing to do, and I imagine it has its pitfalls attached to it as well.
Well, I've never thought that way. I've always enjoyed traveling, and journalism gave me that opportunity. I've returned to Afghanistan because, you know, the country just clicked for me, and I'm not quite sure why. I got very close to my translator, mm-hmm. and he has become a story as much as the country. So in a way, I keep going back because it's just yet another chapter in our relationship and what that relationship reveals about the country.
Mm-hmm. Well, Malcolm, it's great to hear your voice again. Continue all the good work, and it's so good to have you on the show, Malcolm.
Thanks, Steve. I appreciate it.
You bet. All the best to you, man.
Thank you. You too.
Okay. That's Malcolm Garcia. He's a freelance writer who writes about Afghanistan. You can find a link to some of his investigative articles, more information about our show, and previous broadcasts at kcur.org.